SF Signal, episode 88, a chat with author Aaron Hoffman. SF Signal. Tonight on the podcast, I have for you a special treat. This is Erin Hoffman, and she is the author of Sword of Fire and Sea, the Chaos Knight Book 1, which is available from Pyre, our friends over there. Hi, Erin.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
No problem. How's it going?
Oh, it's good. Very good.
Now, you're in L.A. tonight.
I am. I was just at a workshop on for women in games, actually, so I'm visiting just for the night.
I'm curious about this workshop, if I could just bother you for a half a second here.
Oh, sure.
So, women in games?
I don't know if there was anything posted about it. It was funny. It's hosted by the Canadian consulate, actually, part of the game industry, which is super cool. So it was a group of, I think, about 25 women from all over the industry and in the industry and government. It was really cool.
So you broke up just a little bit there as you were saying that. So is this about people working in the gaming industry? Is women getting jobs in the gaming industry?
Yeah, everything. So it was about half academia and half industry. And it's about partnership and, you know, the government side of Canadian side is about trade and economics and just about increasing diversity to improve the industry.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Were you one of the speakers, or were you just there learning more about it?
Participant.
I'm sorry?
I was just a participant, so okay. Kind of along for the ride.
I understand. I've known a lot of women who work in the role-playing game industry, like doing the pen and paper kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I do know some folks on the video game side. I like to tell the story. A friend of mine works for Blizzard, and no one's allowed to know.
Yeah.
Just curious, you know, what have your experiences been? Is there a lot of diversity in the video game industry, or is that something that they're still kind of working on?
Oh, it's pretty terrible, honestly. I believe the latest statistic is still 20%.
Oh, wow. Okay. Which,
yeah. And that's after decades of work. So we're trying to make it better.
No doubt. Okay. Well, Let's talk a little bit about Sword of Fire and Sea, because that's the reason, you know, I invited you to come on. I wanted to chat a little bit about this book. This is the book that Lou Anders was saying that griffins are the new dragons.
Oh, was he? Yeah, I believe that.
So tell our listeners just a little bit about the book.
Yeah, so it's a fantasy novel, adventure fantasy. I wrote it kind of somewhat in reaction to longer fantasy books. You know, I read Wheel of Time and Game of Thrones and a lot of the longer fantasy, which I really, really love all of that. But I first was reading fantasy. I was reading a lot of more adventure style, even like Treasure Island, wild, adventurous, really fast-paced books, and I thought it would be really cool to kind of use that with a fantasy environment and really try and push how much fantasy world I could get into a fast-paced adventure novel. So that's what Sword of Fire and Sea is. The main character is Arian Rulorat, who is a ship captain, and he comes from a long line of people who married into a fire family, which is something you're not supposed to do, at least in this era of the world. The magic has changed to where you run the risk of a kind of genetic disease if you cross elemental boundaries. And his family did that and kind of gave up imperial favor in order to do so because his great-grandfather was in love with this fire priestess and also committing his family to this disease without quite knowing it. And then Vidarian is called to fulfill an agreement that his family had to enter into in order for his. And that's how it all starts.
So I want our listeners to know that we're doing this over Skype, and Erin is at a hotel, and she's at the mercy of the hotel's Wi-Fi. And so at the end of that, you cut out a little bit. You're cutting in and out just a little bit. I heard the part where he. He marries into the family, and this is the great grandson. He's tasked with what now?
He agreement called the Breakwater Agreement. So basically, the magic in the world at this time in this particular area, priestesshoods in each of the elements. And in order to marry this fire priestess, his great grandfather had to enter into this agreement that would, it was basically a, we're going to call on you at some point, and what you want to do, you have to answer it, and you have to do this thing that we're going to ask you to do, by way of binding his family to the priestesshood.
So either the man who's marrying the priestess or any of his descendants.
That's right.
Okay. That's very intriguing. So we're looking at the descendant of the guy who marries into the fire elemental family.
Right, that's right.
And now what is he called to do?
He has to escort a fire priestess named Ariadel to a specific location, and he has to do it through some really dangerous parts of the water, because territory, that kind of thing. Because when she is on land, the people that are hunting her, called the Bacortha, they're telepathic magic users, they can sense where she is unless her presence is being masked. So they have to take an ocean route to this other temple, and he has to take her there through dangerous places.
So you said that you read some different kinds of fantasy before, and then that this was sort of inspired by that. So I always look at when people talk about their magic systems, I like you're describing that, you know, she has to be masked by being on water. And I'm thinking back to some of the old, I want to call them fairy tales, but really the old folk tales where they talk about, you know, iron binding and water right. hiding. And that it was, did you draw from that for this story?
A little bit. I'm sure, just not quite intentionally. World is actually a rather old world. I've been working in it for a long time. I've invented it a few times. I don't actually remember where the elemental magic came from. It's not like it's an innovation or anything like that, but I don't quite remember when I first the primary magic system, but it's very much sort of inherited.
So did you create this world specifically to write your stories in, or were you using this as a gaming world?
It was a little bit of both. It was a long time ago. I was a teenager actually when I started making it, and it was in reaction to some fan groups online, on America Online, back before, you know, when you had to pay for it hourly. I was on message boards talking to other fans of various books, and there was a particular fandom that had a rule for some reason you couldn't have Griffin characters. And there was a group of about three of us that were very incensed about this and decided we were going to make a group where all the characters were Griffin. And that's how it started. And that was, I did the kind of the world Bible for this thing and histories and all kinds of things like that. So, and in the beginning, that all of the characters were Griffins when there were not very many of us, the group eventually grew and we had all kinds of, you know, lots of humans and other species.
How many people?
About 40.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was a lot in those days.
Yeah, well, especially, 40 people on AOL, you crashed the server.
Yes, that's true. It was unlimited by then, unfortunately.
I was actually very upset that the AOL went away, essentially, because, they remember they used to send out the little floppy disks?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to cycle those things, man.
I only needed two more to finish retiling my bathroom. So.
Yeah. I had tons and tons of those discs with the labels taped over them. You know?
So you built this world, and obviously you were gaming a little bit in it. And what made you decide one day to sit down and say, you know what, I think I could write a broader story?
Yeah, there was an anthology being put together, I believe, by Mundania Press, and a novella collection. And I had decided to revisit this world after kind of going away from it for a long time and thinking I would never pick it up again, because it's kind of like, it felt like it was kid stuff in a way. And I thought, oh, you know, it's cliched and all this kind of stuff. And after I sort of got more of a writing education, I guess, really more from like reading everything I could find about fantasy authors, full time, a lot of advice from Marion Zimmer Bradley and things like that. After years of that, I kind of came back to it, and there's a lot of stuff that I was really compelled by on a really fundamental level. Like, it had a kind of purity to it. And I was interested in what happened if I took that world and just moved it about 1600 years in the future or so. And it would give me an excuse to reinvent everything. So I could have all of these memories of this world I and my friends had created as the ancient history for a more modern world that would be kind of like an age of sail. And wrote a novella for that. By that time, the anthology, I believe, was canceled. But they said they really liked it, and could I turn it into a novel? And I thought, oh, well, I probably could do that. And I was working in the game industry, and I was really busy, so it took me years to eventually pick it back up again.
So you lead me down to several different questions. So what do you like to read? So, you know, because obviously that influences you a little bit. You mentioned Wheel of Time. You mentioned George R. R. Martin. What else do you like to read?
I want to say that I'm kind of an eclectic reader. I like a little finished Neil Stephenson's Rimdi, and I loved it. And I love Snow Crash and a lot of cyberpunk and some Gibson, a lot of the old mirror shades in the cyberpunk space, but then a lot of high fantasy as well. I don't reread Tolkien, but I did read all of that, and obviously, you know, love the world building in it. A lot of Anne when I was younger, and Mercedes Lackey.
Did you say Anne Rice?
Oh, Anne McCaffrey. Sorry.
Oh, Anne McCaffrey. Yeah, you broke out. I'm sorry.
Dragon Riders books, yeah.
Yep. No, I'm sorry. My brain, you say Anne, my brain goes to Anne Rice because I actually liked those books. Now, we had a little email exchange where we were kind of laughing about you had picked up The Magic of Recluse.
Yeah. Just found. I can't believe that. I mean, he has all of these books, and he has a lot of thematic similarities to stuff that I'm really interested in. I'm just now discovering him, so I'm excited.
And did you finish The Magic of Recluse?
No, because Rimdi happened.
What happened?
I got the new Neil Stephenson book came out. And I started that, and it was just, I couldn't put it down. I mean, it was kind of, in a way, custom built, because he's talking about massively multiplayer online games developers, and you know, Neil Stephenson, so...
Now, you know, it's kind of funny because you mentioned video games, and I like to play video games. And I started early. I was doing, you know, ColecoVision and Atari 2600. And, you know, I still have a Nintendo. I have a Super Nintendo. I have a Sega Genesis with the CD player. and all these things still work. I have the original PlayStation. I have a Nintendo 64. Let's see. And then I jumped to, now I have an Xbox 360 and a Wii. And for a little while there, my life was consumed by a specific multiplayer online game. You may have heard of it. It's called the World of Warcrack.
Yeah, I could take a guess.
So how long have you been in the video game industry? How long have you worked in that industry?
So it's a funny thing. That writing group that I had made, one of the members of it, and we still don't know where she is. We kind of lost her because she just vanished off the internet. Voluntarily, she told us she was leaving. But she introduced me to Gemstone, which was a Simutronic text-based game on AOL. And I got into Gemstone, and I did the first 5 minutes and decided that was lame. But I tried one of their other games, Dragon Realms, and I got really sucked into that and played it a lot for the next year. So, and then I applied to be a developer because I was playing it so much and I was so fascinated with it because it's just like a living book, you know, with thousands of other people playing at the same time. It's still, to me, one of the most for storytelling. And I was an assistant developer on that without even quite realizing the game developer, because all of their processes and the way that they made the game still exists today throughout the game industry. So I kind of got an internship in the game industry without realizing it. And then once I was all the way to college and almost done, I had been studying 3D art. And then all of a sudden, there was a new program being started at the college for games. And it didn't dawn on me until then, oh yeah, people are actually professional game developers. And because I had that experience with Simutronics, which over the game industry recognized, I got a scholarship to go to the Game Developers Conference. And I had my first job and took a long swerve away from graduate school to go join the game industry.
Wow. Do you feel comfortable telling people, I mean, any of the games that you worked on, or?
Oh, sure. Dragon Realms for a long time. I was the race's assistant. If anyone is familiar with War, I did a lot of work on, there was a snake race, lizard race, kind of contentious. I worked on for a long time, which is an online virtual world.
I'm sorry, say that one again.
Go Pets.
Okay.
It was a online cats and dogs virtual world startup. And a company called Tauldron before that. I had actually started working on Black Nine, which was never published. I worked on Shadowbane, The Lost Kingdom, which was a port of the Shadowbane MMO for Korea and Asia. And then worked on, gosh, jumping around a bit, and I currently work for Zynga on Frontierville.
So how did the video game stuff, you know, and your experiences there and the things you didn't work, how or did that impact your writing?
Interesting.
I don't ask silly questions.
No, that's a very good question. It's hard to separate, you know, especially because I've been doing them for more same time period. Mm-hmm. And the cultures are very similar. The video game industry comes from a lot of people that read, you know, played a lot of tabletop games. They were side by side, you know, and so they valued fiction publication. This, you know, it's not quite a game credit, but it's highly respected. That was an assisting thing when I was a game designer, that I had writing credit, because it's seen as a bonus of sorts. I think I've always been world building oriented. So to me, they're kind of the same thing.
Sure.
And when you have a world, you're going to have histories of the world. You're going to have the things that happen. And I definitely have that sort of school.
Yeah, in World of Warcraft, they called that lore.
Yes. That's one of my favorite phrases, actually, from another game developer, is looking at some incongruous thing that didn't make sense. And so, yeah, we can lore that shit up. Make it make sense.
Yes, and that's always fun. You know, I'm also curious, what's the name of the bird? See, now you're getting to know how my brain works and how I jump from subject to subject.
I love it.
I'm staring at a picture of you holding a bird, and I'm just curious, what's the name of the bird?
Yeah, her name is Basia. She's an African gray, and my birds are second home adopted birds. And she, when we got her, in a while, but she spoke Russian when we got her, and she had belonged to a Russian family. She spoke a little bit of French as well, French, English, and will still periodically have long phone conversations with herself in what I think is actually still the remnants of some.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. A Russian speaking bird. That's a trip. That's new.
Yes, she's hilarious.
That's a novel all in itself.
Yeah, there's got to be something in it. I actually, I hope to write some space opera at some point with sentient African greys in it.
Now you spend your days working on video games, and then you work on your writing. You come home, you kick back on the couch. Do you play anything? Do you play games still, or is it one of those things where it's like, oh, I do that all day, I don't want to mess with it anymore.
No, I definitely play. The day that you can't play games anymore is probably the day you should stop. Although that's, some game developers would kill me for that, because a lot of people do just do it for work, and they're exposed to their game and they're immersed in their game, which is fine. But I'm playing a lot of Glitch at the moment that are new, and I love the world that Tiny Speck has created with Glitch.
Are you a console gamer? Are you a PC gamer or Mac gamer? What do you prefer?
I've really fallen away from consoles. I think a lot of people have. I think it's not uncommon. It wasn't by choice. I still have a PlayStation 3. I actually still have my Sega Genesis that I pull out periodically. But mostly it's a lot of not even very much downloadable anymore, but web-based accessible games.
Can Can I tell you a secret?
Yes, please do.
I bought the Sega Game Pack for Xbox. So I can play all my old favorite Sega games on Xbox, which is kind of
nice.
Cool. Yeah, and then I don't have to drag the Xbox out anymore. Or I mean, I don't have to grab the Sega out anymore. You know, because I used to do that. I used to keep like all the old video games like right there by the TV, and then I could just hook them up when I wanted to. But now that you can get like these games on, I think the Sega disc that I have has something like 200 freaking games on the DVD, you know, and all the old, like, Sonic is on there, Altered Metal is on there. I mean, there's all these really, or Altered Beast, I'm sorry. There's all these old Sega games on. It's just fantastic.
Great game. It's so funny. I tried to do that. I have a Sega pack for my PlayStation 3, but I'm too obsessive because of the Echo the Dolphin games, and the controls just aren't quite right on that PlayStation controller, and they cut out some of the sound effects. There's little things that drive me nuts about those repackaged ones.
Oh, every once in a while, I still have to drag out my PlayStation because I have Xevious on there, and it's Xevious 3D, so they did like a 3D version, but I hate that. I just like to play the old arcade version.
Yeah, for sure.
And I play that all the time. Anyway, I digress. like I said, I was curious about the bird. I was curious about what you play. Did you see Batman Arkham City?
I don't have it yet. It came out 2 days ago. It's super exciting looking. The first game was awesome.
And it's supposed to be an open world concept. It's
supposed to be, yeah. I haven't seen the reception of that, how well they pulled off. I know there's a lot of anticipation.
It's interesting that you mentioned getting kind of away from console gaming, because one of the things that it does annoy me is how they want to go to online. They're trying to push you to online, and I don't want to go online. Yeah, you know, I want to go out and get the disc and be able to play the game. I don't want to go out and buy the disc and then, oh, I have to go online to get the extra content.
Yeah. Or when they have to patch it and they force you to patch it, and if you don't have it connected, there's a lot of weird use cases.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying. But I'll tell you, I also don't like I'll play an occasional online Flash game, but for the most part, I don't like Flash. Just because I have MacBooks, and as soon as you go to a Flash heavy site, you know, the it just starts eating up all the resources.
Yeah, it's a horrendously inefficient thing for what we make it do.
Yeah,
but it's that accessibility, you know.
So you've got Sword of Fire and Sea, and it sounds like it's a really awesome premise and very, very cool and original idea. Are you planning, I mean, do you have any short stories out? Are you going to do any kind of, you know, sometimes they want the author to write a couple of short stories and put them out there that are kind of tie-ins to the world. Anything like that planned, or any sequels planned? Obviously, this is the Chaos Knight Book 1.
Right. It is a trilogy. It's officially a trilogy now. I actually just signed the contract for the third book. So.
Oh, well, congratulations.
It's very, very exciting. I'm so happy to be working with Fire. And in terms of short stories, that's actually how I sold the first book. I after kind of putting that first part of it aside for a long time and then coming back to it, I needed to kind of get back in the groove of the world. So I decided to write a short story from the perspective of one of the other characters that would show up in the book. And you know, she's kind of a favorite character of mine. So I wrote a story about her adolescence called Storm Chaser, Storm Shaper, and sold that to Beneath Ceaseless Skies. And there were a series of actual accidents where I had been talking to Lou on Facebook, and I was asking him about some particular story. I actually, kind of a cyberpunk story, and he went looking for something else, and the link was broken. So he went Googling and found this story, and then asked if I had a novel set in the same world. And I said, of course, if you want, you know.
Of course I do. Give me 2 weeks.
Yes, exactly. So then with the second book, now that I finished the second, that's in production for April, I wrote another story for Beneath Ceaseless Skies called Sight Wolf, which I was kind of trying to show that the world can contain a much darker sort of gray first-person narrative. So that's also in Beneath Ceaseless Skies now. And just so as not to break the pattern, I'll write a third one when book three is out.
So wait a minute. The second book is coming out in April?
Yes. Yeah.
That's not that far away.
No, it's pretty soon. It's exciting.
So, Are you doing, is it paper and ebooks? I think Pyre's doing ebooks now, right?
Yeah, both. So Sword of Fire out on Kindle. And there's usually a delay. It's a production delay between the paper and the ebook.
And is the short story still available online somewhere?
Yeah, it's available for free. Skies.com.
You totally broke up, so you got to give the URL again.
It's beneath sifflessskies.com, and it's also, both stories are also linked from my website, which is aaronhoffman.com.
Oh yeah, let's talk about your website for a second, because one of my pet peeves is author websites because they don't look very good, but yours looks very, very nice. I like it.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I think this comes a little bit from the aesthetic of you are from the game industry, so you know your website's going to be a little bit cooler.
I have that same sort of impatience about websites that look like they came from 1992.
Websites that look like they belong in GeoCities.
Right, exactly, with the blink tags and everything.
Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves. So your website is aaronhoffman.com. Are you doing a blog?
Yes, there's a blog.
And how are you good about updating?
No, I'm not as good as I should be. I was doing this thing called the Creature of the Week for a while, but I should never have even thought I could keep up with doing something every week. It was a silly idea. His schedules kind of intensify and take.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Now on there, do you have since we're doing it, do you have Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, all that kind of good stuff?
Oh yes, almost everywhere. I am Griffoness, GryPhoness, on Twitter and Facebook, and yeah.
Now, I just noticed you have a LiveJournal link on here. Are you still using LiveJournal?
I do. You know, it's funny. I've been on LiveJournal since I think 2001. And 2001? 2001.
Oh wow!
I believe. Yeah, long time. It's just surreal that it's been that long, and when I set up my main website, set up the RSS feed to grab from my LiveJournal. So if I tag it a certain tag, it'll just grab it. So I wouldn't have to visit more than one website.
You know, I used LiveJournal for a little while, but I have to tell you that I got tired of LiveJournal.
I totally understand. If I hadn't been with it for so long, they really have gone off the deep end with ads and making the site more inaccessible. It's just funny.
But there are people who have used it forever and still love it to death. And one of the things that a lot of people like is still the ability to lock things.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that's something you can't do easily, at least as far as I've been able to find, easily with WordPress.
No, you can't. I mean, you can't do it with anything that doesn't have a network of people that are all using the same sort of permissions, right? I mean, there are things where you can individually password certain posts, really onerous. It's interesting to me how far ahead LiveJournal was of even a lot of social networks in understanding the dynamics of an online community.
Mm-hmm. So coming from, again, I keep going back to the game side. Coming from the game side, obviously you understand the dynamics of the online community.
I try to. I guess I was kind of a native in that space, being when I was a teenager and going through some of the most formative years of my life online with people that I had never met in person.
It's interesting. So what do you, I mean, when you're on Twitter, do you do a lot on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus, or are you just kind of there saying hello to people? I mean, there are people who feel overwhelmed, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I totally can understand that.
How are you managing it?
It doesn't seem to work as well anymore, but there's a service called, I think it was Start Google Plus, and it's kind of a syndicator. So originally I was using Twitter to syndicate to Facebook, but now I use Start Google Plus to syndicate to Twitter and Facebook from Google Plus.
So you only have to do one update and it goes to everybody.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah, I kind of use TweetDeck for that, and I would love for TweetDeck to add Google Plus.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But now that Twitter has bought TweetDeck, I'm not sure that that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, I would be. That's the problem, is these networks fight with each other. Like, Facebook with its new feed thing has been collapsing posts from the same site into one thing. So if you use Start Google Plus, it's collapsing everybody from Start Google Plus into one post, which basically makes your posts invisible.
Very cool. So what else is on the horizon for Aaron? Are you doing any conventions? You going to World Fantasy? You going to do any signings anywhere? Anything like that?
I am going to World Fantasy. And I'm really looking forward to it. I've never been before. I've been to the last two Dragon Cons, and not this year, but the year before was my first Dragon Con. And that was really connected to such a thriving community.
World Fantasy is a lot of fun. It's smaller, and so it feels easier to meet people, and it's more intimate.
Yeah.
That's the way it feels to me.
Yeah, I feel like I lucked out because it's in my hometown this year.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So you don't have to drive anywhere, really. You just kind of like walk across the street.
Oh, well, I actually live in the house. We're going to have to drive down.
I'm teasing. I've been to San Diego. It was a long time ago. I remember lots and lots of hills, and I accidentally drove too far and had to come back through like a checkpoint.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. No, I don't have anything in my trunk. Anyway.
Yeah,
it's in San Diego this year, so that'll be good for you. Are you going to actually stay at the at the con hotel, or are you?
Oh, no, with family.
Okay, yeah, that works too. You'll have a blast. Tons and tons of great people there. Watch out for Sam Sykes. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Sam is great. I just like to tease him.
I have experienced the Sam Sykes.
All right. Well, you know what? I told you I'd keep you about 30 minutes, so I think we're just about done. Is there anything else you wanted to tell people about? We've got your website, we've got your Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. Anything else?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm happy to be here. It's so funny actually to hear your voice because I've listened to the other podcasts, so it's like hearing a rare and talking. But I'm very social online anyway. So
very cool. So anybody wants to just look you up and say hello, they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Aaron.
Thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
You know, people ask me all the time about podcasting, and they ask me about the software that I use and the equipment that I use, and you know, how do I do this and how do I do that? And there's one thing that I always try to tell people. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, Skype on a Mac over Wi-Fi does not do well. And I don't know if it's the way that the Mac is handling the packets of information over the Wi-Fi, or if it's the way Skype is sending them. I don't know what happens, but for whatever reason, Skype on a Mac over Wi-Fi does not work very well. And you get a lot of problems. And the other thing is Skype doesn't like to share, at least on the Mac, as far as I've experienced myself, it doesn't like to share a Wi-Fi connection. So I offer that up to anyone out there, any budding podcasters looking to do interviews. Mac, Skype, Wi-Fi is a no. That's why I ran 50 feet of Cat 5 through my house from the router to the laptop. Well, originally to the iMac, but now to the laptop because I'm using that for the most part. So, thanks again to Aaron for coming on the show. We do appreciate that. That was a great conversation. We had a lot of fun. So go check out her book, Remember Griffins Are the New Dragons. Lou said that, not Lee. I got that screwed up a while ago. Usual stuff, sfsignal.com each and every day for all your science fiction needs. Follow John D on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal, unless you're anti-bagel. In which case, we don't really want you on this. You know, listening to us. Well, you can listen to us because I, you know, I'm a Bear Claw fan. If you're looking for me online, it's really difficult to remember. It's ATFMB. Everything is ATFMB. ATFMB.com. See, I can't even say it. ATFMB.com, twitter.com/ATFMB, facebook.com/ATFMB. There's a theme there. Follow the trend. The only place that's different, really, is on Google+. That's just because I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I think that's pretty much it. We're going to have another panel next week, another interview, hopefully. I've got something scheduled, so unless something weird happens, which could possibly happen, given that it's the World Fantasy week, and a lot of authors are going to World Fantasy, so, but I'm not. Boo-hoo. But you never know. So hopefully that'll come through, and we'll have that interview for you next week. But other than that, I think that's it for me. I'm out of here. Snow's coming. Lots and lots of snow. See ya.